You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Now from Times Square, here's what you need to know.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for What You Need to Know.
Good old classic, Tony. Oh, the years, the memories. And it's good to have you with us. And America's favorite doctor is back with us as well. Always good to see you.
Happy, you too, and Eva too, and Kat back in the control room. Kat in control. Happy Tuesday.
We do have some medical headlines to talk about. Specifically, there is an option for people trying to quit vaping or cigarettes. Talk to us about what this option is.
So this is an interesting medication, and the results of this clinical trial just published in JAMA Internal Medicine. This is a drug called cytisine. That's what it's known as. It's in phase three clinical trials now. It's a plant-based natural medication. Clinical trials most recently reported put this drug up against placebo in a 12-week clinical trial. They looked at about 131 adults who vaped daily and wanted to quit. And what they found is that taking this medication doubled their odds of quitting. Side effects were mild: nausea, abdominal pain, or discomfort, and insomnia or some disruption of their sleep pattern. But I think the take-home point here is that for people who are addicted to smoking, whether that's combustible cigarettes or e-cigs, there are medications that can help them quit. And as you guys have probably heard me say before, the average person who quits tries 7 times.
Wow.
So do not give up.
That was my next question. So what are some of the ways that we can stop using, you know, e-cigarettes and vaping?
You know, everyone's different. Sometimes they rely on pharmacologic medication to manage it. Sometimes they do, a mind kind of meditation, hypnosis, but trial and error, support groups work, setting a date, holding yourself accountable. But the key is do not give up.
Do not give up.
Yep.
All right, Doc, thank you very much. All right, Morgan Norwood is in the house. Always good to see you, my friend, with a look at the headlines.
Exactly. So good to see you guys. All right, we got a lot to get to, and we do begin with that dangerous weather on the move. Our Ginger Z is in hard-hit Oklahoma.
Here on the site of the Barnsdall, Oklahoma tornado, just one of the homes destroyed. All of the contents of the home here strewn throughout the trees. You can see that truck is crushed, another home over there. People are really just starting to take it in. And we have a whole nother day here. This afternoon will erupt in parts of the Ohio River Valley. It includes Indianapolis and Lexington, Columbus too, but that huge area keeps going. On Wednesday, a new storm comes in. Little Rock and Memphis at the center of it, but a lot of people are going to be involved for a very destructive week ahead.
Yeah, and for round two, Ginger, thank you. Other headlines to get to, ABC confirms a second American has just been arrested in Russia. That is in addition to U.S. Staff Sergeant Gordon Black, who was brought into custody last week. Now, officials say Black had traveled to eastern Russia without permission. It was then arrested there. His mother says that he was visiting a woman that he met at a bar while stationed in South Korea. All Americans have been advised to avoid travel in Russia. And here at home in a New York City courtroom, adult film actress Stormy Daniels is taking the stand today in the hush money criminal trial of former President Donald Trump. Trump has until Friday to pay a 10th fine for gag order violations. The judge saying Trump may face time behind bars if he continues to break the rules by making public comments about the jury and witnesses. Trump has denied all wrongdoing. And let's talk these clashes. Pro-Palestinian demonstrators at the University of Chicago, they are squaring off with police today at an encampment at Hyde Park. Other colleges facing new confrontations as more universities shift commencement plans in the light of rising tensions. And a new government report is kicking up concerns about the possible future of Social Security and Medicare. The Social Security Trust Fund said to be on track to be depleted, you heard that right, about 11 years from now if shortfalls are not addressed. Former President Trump, he said that he's open to cuts in the programs that 70 million Americans have paid into and also rely on as they age. Meanwhile, President Biden has said that he would not allow that. All right, guys, let's talk sports. Say hello to the new NBA Rookie of the Year, San Antonio Spurs Victor Wembanyama, joining the ranks of legendary talent, making their mark on hardwood history. That award has been given to a new player on the rise every year since way back to 1952-53 season. And the trophies could still keep coming in for him. He's up for Defensive Player of the Year. That's set to be announced today. So The hype is real, guys.
It is real. I hear he's a gentle giant with a gentle soul.
Oh, yes. He has definitely lived up to the hype in every way.
Morgan, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there's much more right here on GMA3. What we're now learning about the new possible progress toward a ceasefire in Gaza. Our team is on the ground in Israel. Welcome back to GMA3. Tensions rising in the Middle East as Israel launches a ground operation in the southern Gaza city of Rafah. The IDF now taking control of the critical Rafah crossing and carrying out airstrikes.
Now, the capture happening 7 months after the deadly attacks that ignited Israel's war against Hamas. And joining us now from Tel Aviv is our friend, foreign correspondent Marcus Moore. Marcus, always good to see you. And we'll start with this. So, what's the latest on the military operation there, and what's the end goal for the Israeli offensive?
DeMarco, this operation got underway overnight, and it included airstrikes, tanks, and soldiers on the ground. They took control of the Rafah crossing, as you just mentioned, which is a key route for aid going into Gaza. And we saw a remarkable image this morning. Israeli flags now flying on the Palestinian side of the border. The IDF, though, emphasizing that this operation is precise and it's also limited, so it's not a widespread operation on the entire city. And of course, it's coming in the midst of increased international pressure from governments and also aid groups that have been imploring Israel to ensure that innocent civilians are protected. Now, this operation no doubt affects the much needed influx of aid going into Gaza. And today, some are suggesting that the Rafah operation may also be a tool to put pressure on Hamas during those critical hostage negotiations that continue this morning.
Let's talk about that humanitarian issue. Thousands of Palestinians who are in Rafah, they have nowhere to go. What does all of this mean for the humanitarian crisis that we've been hearing about?
Well, Eva, it's still unfolding in a very real way. We do know that Israel, less than 24 hours before the ground operation started, they did drop flyers in eastern Rafah urging people to evacuate to an expanded humanitarian zone. And they also told aid groups to move away from that area as well. Now, this is a part of an effort on the part of Israeli officials as well to facilitate the work to set up field hospitals and tents and also to repair water supply to part of that area. But Eva, there's so much concern about the innocent families that have been caught in the middle of this, many of them who went to Rafah because of the fighting in the central part of Gaza and to the north. And now many of them are having to move all over again.
And speaking of concern, how does this impact ceasefire talks and also hostage negotiations?
Yeah, well, DeMarco, it's important to point out at this point that the negotiations are continuing, and even with the Rafah operation that is underway. But there is some concern that perhaps this could have an impact on the negotiations, which, by the way, just to give you some background on what Hamas has agreed to, they have agreed to a deal that includes three phases, the first one starting with a six-week ceasefire, and then the release of Palestinian prisoners in exchange for 33 hostages. But this morning, the exact details, how many hostages and when and where, that's where some distance is between all the sides. And Hamas is also asking for the IDF to pull its troops back towards the Gaza border, allowing displaced Palestinians to travel freely from south to north. And just some of the other major sticking points are really about the end of this war. Hamas has been calling for a permanent end to Israel's bombardment. That is something that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said they will not agree to. So there's been a lot of back and forth on this. And Israel has said that the counter proposal from Hamas does not meet Israel's core demands.
And Marcus, we know that President Joe Biden spoke with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. What is the White House's position right now in all of this?
Well, their position all along has been, number one, to support or convey their support to Israel. But as it relates to the Rafah situation, President Biden made the point that they want to make sure, ensure that innocent civilians have a place to go, a safe place to be in the midst of this operation. And there had been calling for to see detailed plans of this, and certainly that would make them more comfortable. But that's really the major point. Outside of that, the White House, President Biden, and many other governments have all urged for all the sides to talk and to try to find some agreement to make sure the innocent civilians are protected in the midst of this really dire situation we've watched unfold in Gaza.
Again, the world is watching, Marcus. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Foreign correspondent Marcus Moore for that report. And just ahead here on GMA3, the best looks from the fashion event of the year.
It was a night, of course, and our front row seat to the Met Gala, green carpet when we come back. Stay with us.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Back now with a recap of some of the most memorable looks from fashion's biggest night.
What a night. We're talking about the Met Gala, and here with all the couture coverage is beauty expert Blake Anubi. Blake, always good to see you.
Always
you
are good to see
looking
you all.
Lovely yourself.
I showed up on theme. I figured it was only appropriate for today at least.
No, of course, we should let our viewers know that this dress comes with a brush as well.
It does. We've been brushing the dress all this fringe. It's been giving us a time this morning.
A little fancy, but
we're making
beautiful.
It work.
We are making do. So this year's theme was the Garden of Time.
Yes.
How did we get to the garden?
So last night, there are two things, because I think people are a little confused. Mm-hmm. So last night was actually in celebration of the Costume Institute's new exhibition, which is entitled Sleeping Beauties, Reawakening Fashion. Mm. The dress code for last night kind of followed that. So that's how we got to the Garden of Time. It's inspired by J.G. Ballard's 1962 short story, and it was interpreted many ways. Some were literal, and some celebrities really took some creative license.
Mm. Let's talk about that interpretation.
Yes.
Walk us through some of the looks.
So some of our favorites from last night, of course, we have to talk about the co-chair, Zendaya, who gave us not one, but two looks. Her first look was Maison Margiela. It was absolutely fabulous. Definitely a darker take, think garden at night. Her second look was Givenchy with a fabulous Alexander McQueen hat.
Okay, let's talk about the fellas if we can. I loved Coben Domingo.
Yep.
Tom Ford never misses.
No.
But he didn't have on Tom Ford last night. Usher did well as well.
He did. So everybody looked fabulous. And what the men did was they kind of added flowers to their tuxes. Mm-hmm. Particularly, we saw it on the lapel. Coleman Domingo, he definitely went bigger. There was a fabulous black tulip. You know, Tom Ford, he kind of adorned the lapel with, you know, a bunch of different pins. But overall, the men really took it last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really feel like the guys have been stepping up their game at these red carpets.
Oh, absolutely. And I really feel like you cannot talk about men's fashion these days without talking about, like, the Colemans and things like that.
Okay, we got to talk about the other women, though, because there were lots of pretty dresses.
We do. I know. We have to go back to the ladies.
30 seconds in.
So, of course, we have to talk about Gigi Hadid, who was a vision in Tom Brown. Mm-hmm. Of course, I love the front, but to me, the best part was when she turned around, there was this corset detailing that was absolutely to die for. We have to talk about Lana Del Rey, who is an archive Alexander McQueen. Her interpretation, again, was more of the trees, the branches, so not as much the flowers, which we absolutely love. Taylor Russell, of course, as Loewe's global brand ambassador, was in Loewe. Her bodice was made to imitate wood, and that is really what everyone was talking about. Of course, the skirt was fabulous, but it was that bodice that really did it.
What did you think about Cardi B?
Oh, she looked fabulous.
Incredible.
It was definitely nighttime, dark rose, like it very much, you know, her and Teyana Taylor kind of leaned into the rose. Teyana Taylor from Harlem leaned into her album, A Rose from Harlem. So the girls really leaned into roses. And last but certainly not least was Tyla, who leaned into the sands of time.
I love that.
She was in custom Balmain and had to be carried up the steps because she could not move in the dress. So she was carried up all the way to the top.
There are a lot of steps.
There were a lot of steps, but it looked like there were four or five gentlemen that made sure that she made it up where she needed to go.
Who were your best dress for the night?
So my best dress, I have to say, Demi Moore and Harris Reed was absolutely fantastic. Definitely a literal interpretation, but I think a resounding from my group chats to Instagram to Twitter, it looks like Demi Moore was the winner. But on the men's side, it was Bad Bunny. in Margiela.
He was incredible. Yeah. Bad Bunny.
Absolutely incredible. And what I also loved about Bad Bunny was he did all of his interviews last night in Spanish, even to those that spoke English. So it was such a vision last night.
I love that. Love to see it. And we love you too.
Thank you know, you I love much. You all.
Yes. Always. Who was your best back. Dress?
Yeah. My best dress was Deborah Roberts.
Yes,
Deborah Roberts. Yeah, she looked good.
She was
flowers
stunning.
On this dress. Yeah. And you, if you follow her on Instagram, you follow the whole like evening with her.
Yes.
Too.
Also, she, you know how much she loves and respects the art of fashion.
It's a long day.
It's a long day.
We only see the beauty of it.
Yes. Right,
Blake, again,
yes.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you all for having me.
Still ahead on GMA3, a little chair yoga with Dr. Jen Ashton. We're going to talk about the surprising health benefits.
Plus, a major voice in the Latino community, Luis A. Miranda Jr., reflects on a lifetime of political activism when we come back. Back now with Dr. Jen, and we are talking about Miss USA choosing to step down, citing that she has some mental health issues she needs to handle.
Yeah, I think when this story hit the headlines, the first thing I thought of, we will never really understand or probably appreciate the positive effect and impact that this had on so many people of all ages, of all backgrounds, who hear this story and think, wow, this is someone who achieved her dream. It's a one-year term, am I right? You know, and felt that she could not continue that 1 year because of mental health issues and what it looks like to prioritize your own health and well-being above anything else when mental illness gets in the way of someone's ability to go about not just their day-to-day activities, but to actually do their job. It is as life-threatening and as severe as untreated diabetes, uncontrolled high blood pressure, and could be potentially that life-threatening. So whether it's a professional athlete or someone in a public position or someone who's not in a public position who just says, I have to step back and take care of myself, that is called being a role model. I'm sorry to hear that she was going through this, but she is truly living up to her title in leading by example.
And she's not alone. We've seen it happen on a global stage, Naomi Osaki and also Simone Biles. Why is it important, real quick, for us to take a break?
I think when you feel that you can't do your job, whatever that job is, because you are suffering hour to hour, minute to minute, day to day, that's a medical emergency, and we have to take it as such. So this is a great example.
Emergency, that's the key word there.
Yeah.
Doc, thank you.
Dr. Jen Ashton, back again, joining us with your prescription for wellness.
Okay, has to actually do with the benefits of chair yoga or chair exercise, which a lot of people do either by choice or by necessity. So first of all, some demonstration here. You know, cat-cow, which you can do on the floor. Okay. You just pull your belly, suck your belly button back to your spine and hold it and then release it. Don't we feel so zen like this? And then you can do an upward salute and just look up.
Oh, this is cool.
But people do ab exercises in a chair. They do weights, obviously. You were saying your mom does bands which I love. So there's a lot that people can do just in a chair, and you can get into really good shape.
And any age group, right?
Any age for people either at work or, you know, like, I hope my mom is watching today. Mom,
but this isn't just for old people.
No, it's for anyone.
Seasoned people.
Anyone.
Don't say old people, the seasoned. All right, folks, we would love to hear from you. So hit us up on Instagram with all of your medical questions for us at ABCGMA3.
When we come back, the pivotal role Latino voters will have in the upcoming election. It's a subject close to one man's heart. Stay with us.
And we're cooking with kimchi in this AANHPI month. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Our next guest is a political strategist, an activist, a philanthropist, author, and father of New York's very own music man, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes, and in his new book, he shares stories about his 45-year career in politics, his upbringing in Puerto Rico, and his family, with the goal of helping readers understand the Latino voter in 2024. And here to dive into it all is Luis A. Miranda Jr.
The legend.
Thank you so much for being
Thank
here.
You. Good
Thank
to see you.
For having me here.
Yes.
I'm curious why you decided to write this book now, especially because the election is coming up this year.
I was reading all of these new experts on the Latino vote, looked at two polls, and wrote a column about the Latino votes. And my friend said, rather than complaining, why don't you then write something about your own experience in dealing with the Latino vote? And in doing that, I realized that everything that I have done, my family has been such an integral part of it. So they also became a protagonist of the story. And it ended up being a bit of an autobiography with lots of Latino politics.
So what is your hope for the next generation?
My hope is that we will fully be integrated into the United States. You know, we are 62 million. We're going to be 40% in 20 more years. And as I say in my book, Relentless, we are the ones who are going to be paying Social Security probably for your kids, because we're going to be so many. So being accepted, being part of this society, as we have done with previous waves, it's key to the future of this country.
Well, in talking about the Latino vote, you know, oftentimes we look at it as like a block, but it's really not that simple. What is it that you want politicians to know about Latino voters?
Exactly that. That is not a voting block. We are so used to define minorities, BIPOC, in this country in the black and white paradigm, mm-hmm. that we don't realize that Latinos come from many countries. The reality, the political realities in our countries change from generation to generation. So we are a very diverse group with lots of commonalities. So elected officials and people need to understand that there's ways to address all of us, but we really have to pay attention to the unique political characteristics that we bring into the equation.
Do you feel like the Latino vote has been ignored or taken advantage of or for granted?
No, I think it's difficult to understand. And when you don't understand it, as I say in the book many times, then it's the Latino vote rather than unique characteristics that they bring into the political equation of this country.
What are you hoping that voters take, viewers and readers take away from this book when they read it?
I think the most important part, it's that we are here to stay. We're here to make this country better, bigger, and that we are the hope with other groups that live in the United States, the hope of the future of the United States.
And what do you want the candidates to know who are running for president?
That they need to understand who are the Latinos in their jurisdiction before they begin to say three words in Spanish and think they got it.
Mm. Okay, so we've talked about politics, but also you have a really interesting family. And you talk about your family in the book.
They're a lot of fun.
What fun stories can we expect? Is there any little secret sneak peek?
The book talks a lot about my family. I tell a story of Lin-Manuel and my daughter. My daughter is the oldest. Of their personalities. I was sitting down, I wanted tea, I asked my daughter to get me tea. She gives me her attitude that, why don't you get it yourself? And walks away. My son, Lin-Manuel, comes over, gives me a kiss on my head, says I love you, goes away, and never brings the tea.
Oh no!
So it felt differently, but the end result was the same.
It was the same. Well, thank you so much for being on, man. We appreciate it. And all that you've done, too. I mean, nearly 50 years. Wow.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And you can get a copy of his book. It's out now.
Yes, today.
Coming up next, a little culinary joy in our GMA3 kitchen.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Chef Esther Choi is helping us celebrate AANHPI month.
Back now with one of the hosts of 24 in 24, Last Chef Standing, a brand new show described as Food Network's most ambitious and grueling culinary competition to date.
And she's joining us now to show us how to make a special dish in honor of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Please welcome Chef Esther Choi, everybody.
Yes.
Good to
Congratulations.
See you.
You've had a baby since the last time I saw you.
Oh my gosh, yes. I did have a baby and did a 24-hour cooking
competition
show.
That's a big thing.
Yes.
Congrats.
Trying to do it all.
Mama, super mom.
Love to see it.
So, what are we making today?
So we are making kimchi mac and beef. So kimchi mac and beef, this is kind of like my ode to my Korean American upbringing. So a classic American dish, kind of like mac and beef, like hamburger helper, if you will, you know, something that I grew up eating, but adding, you know, a Korean flair, and it gives like a different dimension to the dish, and it's awesome.
Let's get to it.
Okay. So we have some oil, and it's a really easy dish. You know, it comes together in like 15, 20 minutes.
Ooh, we
and
like that.
Kids love it. And that's how you get your kids to eat kimchi, you know, like I love to say. So you want to add some onion and
do
some
the whole
kimchi?
Of it
yeah,
the
middle, just throw it in
all
there.
All of those onions.
Sorry, not trying to.
Okay.
I cook a lot.
Some onion and then garlic.
The whole of it or just a little
bit? Yeah, just all of it. I like garlic, you know.
Same thing.
I like to add a lot of it.
And I like for the people I'm around to eat the garlic as well.
Of course.
And so is this something quick that we can put together, especially for parents who have small kids?
I would say so. 15, 20 minutes. As soon as your pasta is cooked, the sauce should be ready. We add kimchi, and kimchi gives this amazing, delicious depth of flavor. And that's sort of like my secret ingredient when I cook. I love to add kimchi to different dishes that is not only Korean, but a lot of my American dishes, like my pasta. Instead of adding onion, if I don't have an onion, I'll add kimchi.
I have
cooked. Even tapping the pan. She's like, okay.
And then after the onions kind of get soft, you then come to the protein. And you can add beef, which I love to do, but you can also add ground chicken, ground turkey,
whatever version of it.
Yeah, exactly. Any ground meat you want, and of course bacon.
I see that bacon.
Because you know bacon makes everything.
Never go wrong
better.
With bacon.
The Koreans love some pork, man.
I know. We we do love our pork. And I feel like the bacon is just, you know, gives that smoky flavor. It adds a lot of richness. That when you're making like quick sauces like this. That's the way to go. You want to use as much help as possible.
Fat is always good.
Yes. Nice. So that's going. And then when that is kind of brown and sauteed, you'll add the tomatoes as well.
Okay.
So tomatoes.
Mix it all in
there. Yes, mix it all in there. And then when it's kind of all cooked and ground up,
that's what it looks
like. This.
Amazing.
You know? I mean,
this
in itself with like a bowl of rice would be delicious, right? I mean, for me, anything with a bowl of rice.
Yeah, same.
But kids love pasta.
Maybe a little egg. There you go.
Little egg, exactly. So from here, we're going to add a little bit of chicken stock.
Okay.
And this is also another secret ingredient of mine.
Sesame oil?
Fish sauce.
Oh, fish sauce.
Fish sauce.
Fish sauce is kind of like that umami MSG that adds like that like flavor that you're like, what is that? It's fish sauce. And then smoked paprika.
Just a little bit?
Just a little bit. If you like it spicy, you can add a little more. And that's pretty much it. You can add some salt and pepper.
Hello.
안녕하세요. Oh, I love that.
I love your Korean.
That's the only thing I can say.
And then from here, we're just going to add our cooked pasta.
Oh, so you don't pour it over it. You just mix it all in?
No, you mix it all in because you do this because when you add the cheese, you want everything sort of like melt together.
It's so good.
The cheese makes it like this creamy, like mac and cheese feel. And cheese and kimchi, I must tell you, is the best.
It's a beautiful marriage, isn't it?
Well, I asked you when you came up here, I was like, this makes me think of like the tteokbokki with the cheese.
Exactly.
American cheese
And real quick, tell us about the competition. So it's 24 hours.
So 24 chefs, 24 competitions, in 24 hours. So literally, the chefs are cooking for 24 hours straight without the clock stopping at all.
Oh, wow.
A chance to win $50,000 in a trip to Hawaii.
$50,000 trip to Hawaii, and then the coveted title of Last Chef Standing.
This is amazing.
Esther, this is so good.
Is it good? We have to try the dish.
I will. I definitely will try it.
The finale is this Sunday at 8 p.m. on the Food Network, and it's the last four chefs, and literally they've been cooking for 20 hours straight without the clock stopping.
That's amazing. This is like elevated Hamburger Helper.
I mean, elevated.
Chef Esther Joy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And you can catch, as she just mentioned, the season finale of 24 and 24, Last Chef Standing, this Sunday night on Food Network. And for today's recipe, scan that QR code right there on your screen or go to goodmorningamerica.com/food.
Bravo. Once again, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
When we come back, the new sci-fi series about to debut. Star Joel Edgerton is here to take us deep inside the dark matter journey when we come back.
Sorry, I took a bite.
All good.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to LibsynAds.com now. That's LibsynAds.com.
A box that would allow a person to travel across the multiple realities of quantum physics. And what if he used that box to travel to my world?
Wow, his American accent is good. Welcome back. That was a clip from the highly anticipated Apple TV series, Dark Matter. It's a sci-fi thriller based on a best-selling novel by the same name.
And our next guest plays a professor who gets abducted into the alternate version of his life. Please welcome Golden Globe-nominated actor Joel Edgerton. Good to see you. So tell us about Dark Matter. What can we expect?
Yeah, I mean, just as you said, it's essentially about a guy being kidnapped into a parallel universe. I describe it as kind of parallel universe version of a story that doesn't have superheroes. It's more for the average family. And what it really is exploring is this question of, you know, is there something else that you could have been doing based on the choices you've made up until this point? What else could you have been? And we get to see that.
That's an interesting question.
Where
now
else would
you be? Gotten my wheels going a little bit. So the novel written by Blake Crouch, who was also the showrunner, the executive producer, created this. You were an executive producer.
I was an executive producer. I helped Blake in the process of turning the book into a series. Which was wonderful to be there at the very beginning of that process. I think Blake did everything, and I think if Blake was a decent actor, then you'd be sitting here talking to him, and I wouldn't be involved in a parallel universe.
And had you worked with him before?
No, I hadn't worked with him. I'd read the book. I'm a big science fiction fan. I've been in a couple of science fiction things as an actor, but not many. But this one really grabbed me because of the real human questions that it asks. And there's a real opulence and thriller aspect to the show, but it's also got some really, you know, deep inner questions to it.
I have a 2-year-old, and I know you have little people as well.
I have almost 3-year-olds.
So I have to ask you about Bluey.
Yes.
We just had Bluey here, but you were a part of Bluey. This is a big thing. What was that like? What did your almost 3-year-old think?
Well, when I went into it, I was doing it because my niece was a huge fan, and then I had kids, and then now I'm a small, you know, character on Bluey. You don't understand, my kids, half the day, I refer to them as Bingo and Bluey, because they dress just so. Hello. Hello. But weirdly, they don't put the voice together with me.
They don't realize
I'm like,
you?
That's Daddy. I'm like, Sure that.
Yeah, right.
See, they're already not impressed.
Move aside, Dad. Like, that's, you know, get away from the TV.
You also got a big birthday coming up.
I do, yeah.
30. Turning 30?
30, yeah.
What are your plans, man?
I'm going to have a big dinner, and then I'll wait probably until I get back to Australia to have a big party, because that's where most of my close people are. But yeah, I don't really celebrate birthdays, weirdly. I think it's because I know my brother has a cachet of terrible video and photos of me, and I didn't want to have a 21st because I knew he was going to pull it out and embarrass me. And I think that's been a running theme in my life. It's like, don't celebrate birthdays.
But this one is a big one. You had to do something for this one, though.
I will. I'll have a big dinner, but I'll be with the people that are close to me, and I might stretch it out. You know, one of those.
Love that.
Series of events.
Sure, yeah. Why not?
So that you can be surrounded by the people that you like longer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in various continents.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
We're available if you have some extra seats at the
Three
party.
Three tickets.
All right, bang, you're in. Well,
thank you so much for stopping by. Really lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
And Dark Matter premieres globally tomorrow on Apple TV Plus with new episodes streaming every Wednesday. That is what you need to know for today. I'm Eva Pilgrim.
I'm DeMarco Morgan.
And I'm Dr. Jen Ashton.
For all of us here at ABC News, including Joel right here, have a good one, and we will see you tomorrow.
I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.